from the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. A little bit after 8. And today's Tuesday, March 28th, and I'm going to open public hearings on House Bill 2371 and 2372, and I ask Representative Wilson to come up and chat with us about these bills. Your colleague.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Carl Wilson, House District 3. Oh, I'm relieved. I thought we had a potential bloodless coup here a moment ago, but I see it turned out better than expected. I thought Representative Brock Smith had eyes on the chair. Anyway, thank you for hearing the bill today. And again, I really want to thank you for hearing the bill. As you know, with a passage of 40-60 in the last session, we were able to begin to develop a viable industrial hemp program. And I trust that all of you have done enough study where you understand what industrial hemp is. And its importance for the state of Oregon, and especially for my community, noticing the other day that 5 of the poorest 20 zip codes are located in my District 3. And so we are looking for everything we can possibly find to add wealth and success to my community. And it will spread far beyond the borders of my district, I'll tell you. We're excited and interested in seeing what has developed since the passage of 40-60. But from the aeronautical world, we're like an airplane that just cleared the end of the tarmac, and we are climbing. We're in the free air, but we're climbing. And your favorable attitude about our Dash 2 amendments today will help us get more air, more lift under the wings, so that this can be a very viable program for all of us. I'm extremely grateful to the stakeholders who have been meeting on a regular basis to help figure this out. I hesitate to mention them all because I'm afraid I might leave one out. But I do want to single out Oregon State University. We appreciate their interest in this bill and in this program, that we might truly shore up the industrial hemp program and make it something really special. So again, I thank all of the stakeholders. We are looking today at the Dash 2s. They are very closely related to the Dash 1s. I have Courtney Moran here, who is prepared to talk about those differences today. But again, I just want you to know how appreciative I am and we are in our district of you paying heed to our bill here and hearing it. That means a lot to us, so we thank you in advance.
Good morning, Chair Clem and rest of the committee. My name is Courtney Moran. I am an industrial hemp attorney, and I'm also the lobbyist for the Oregon Industrial Hemp Farmers Association. We are an Oregon nonprofit that is comprised of registered industrial hemp farmers and handlers throughout the state of Oregon. And as Representative Wilson mentioned, this bill has truly been a collaboration between our Farmers Association, the Department of Ag, Department of Justice, OSU, Farm Bureau, and several other stakeholders. And we've been meeting very frequently in person, having conference calls to make sure that we're all on the same page and that this bill can really not only make sure that the state of Oregon's industrial hemp program is completely compliant with the Agricultural Act of 2014 industrial hemp research provisions, but also that it will establish the rest of the protocol that we definitely need to make sure that our program is sustainable. And last year, we made great progress. We had 77 farmers cultivate in the state last year. And these are just the changes that we saw that we needed to continue to develop the program. So, Mr. Chair, I want to go with what's best for you. Would you like me to go section by section through the bill or just kind of give an overview of what the bill contains?
I'd say overview.
Okay.
And then we may have questions that get more specific. But
okay, excellent. So the major provisions of this bill are creating a certified seed program at Oregon State University. We do have Dr. Jay Noller here from Crop and Soil Science who can discuss this in more detail with you. But this will establish a certified seed program for the state, further legitimizing our industry and enabling not only Oregon State University to conduct research and breeding on industrial hemp, but also to engage with Oregon farmers and work with their genetics on their land and to help develop this program. We also provide for some modification for our testing requirements, opening up the door for additional labs that can be approved by either the Oregon Health Authority, the Department of Environmental Quality, or the Department of Agriculture, and also remove industrial hemp grain from testing. Right now, it's just potency testing. It doesn't really make sense to have potency testing for grain, so we're removing that from our mandatory testing requirements. We have also created authority for the Department of Ag to establish shipping documentation so that farmers not only have their registrations and their test results to show that what they are transporting is industrial hemp, but that they can pay a fee to the Department of Ag to have a document that shows that what they are transporting is industrial hemp. We also provide for an increase in THC concentration when that occurs on the federal level. We don't want to have to come back here just to change our definition once the federal law changes, so we provide that authority in the definition for when the federal law changes. We also establish an industrial hemp fund, so rather than funds going to the general fund, that they are now established into an industrial hemp fund specifically. And we also provide for four homegrown industrial hemp plants. Right now, if you look at Oregon law specifically, folks are only allowed to home grow marijuana plants. It doesn't really make sense. You can only grow a high THC cannabis plant at your house, not a low THC cannabis plant. So we open up the door that those four plants can be any variety of the cannabis plant. Does anybody have any questions at this point?
Mr. Chair, as you know, I am a radio guy, and I don't have very many marketable skills beyond radio. And so what I have done here today is compile a group of certified smart people from all aspects of the industry who will be more than happy to answer questions as pertaining to what's really happening on the ground.
All right. I think I've got them on my little list here of next people to call up. Any questions for this panel at this point? Okay.
Thank you.
You bet. So let me go ahead and call up Jay Noller, Matt Cyrus, and Jenny Dressler.
Good morning, Chair Clem, members of the committee.
Good morning.
My name is Jay Noller. I'm a professor and head of the Department of Crop and Soil Science at Oregon State University. I am currently registered by the Drug Enforcement Agency for research and handling growing marijuana, specifically industrial hemp. I am currently running the program at Oregon State University on this. I've provided you a handout of our vision for how we can bring industrial hemp into our seed certification service business model, if you will. This, the text, which I'll provide you an overview, is one in which we are bringing in a notion of a industrial hemp breeder, industrial hemp seed producers, and then also how we can utilize our seed certification service to certify different types of industrial hemp seed. And so on my handout on the back side is the flow chart, and I don't want to go into the details of this, but the flow chart essentially, because there is no federal provision at present for the federal recognition of individual plant varieties within cannabis, we are looking at doing this within the state of Oregon, using the current notion of a plant variety protection workflow that we enjoy for other crops. And this means that we have to identify who are the industrial hemp breeders, that industrial hemp breeders bring forward varieties that they believe are stable as industrial hemp. So this is a low THC type of cannabis. And that through this mechanism, we're able to approve their research lines. And so we're using the research line within the Oregon Seed Certification Handbook. Know that seed certification is flows from the statutory authority that's given to the Dean of the College of Agricultural Sciences at Oregon State University. And so we're using existing practices and handbook in that by putting this under the research. This flows well with the federal Farm Bill of 2014, wherein states are allowed to perform pilot research on industrial hemp within their states by their State Department of Agriculture and or a university. And so currently we are utilizing those the 2014 Farm Bill to do our own research, and we're looking in when we look at this current bill, it would bring the Department of Agriculture in as a partner in that research on industrial hemp, and would allow for growers within the state to be recognized as part of our research program. So as this flow diagram shows, is once we have a industrial hemp variety advisory board, which is made up of members of growers, the university, Department of Agriculture, that this group would be identifying who are breeders, who, what of their varieties would be seen as stable, following the same practices we use for plant variety protection for other crops that we have in Oregon and in the U.S., and that it's a recognizable process that should the federal landscape change, wherein industrial hemp would be federally protectable under the Plant Variety Protection Act, we would see that varieties would move into the national and international system. And so the rest of the diagram gives details on this in terms of our ability to recognize seed that is has been developed, that is varieties have been developed here in Oregon, and would be then accessible by Oregon growers and potentially for the stakeholders, they would have a recognizable certification or registry of their seed such that they would know what they were buying when they got it. And so rather than currently, it's not known until the crop comes up as to whether you have marijuana that is higher THC cannabis or industrial hemp, but also the accessibility of that seed. Because to take seed across the state boundary to bring it in, import it from an adjacent state, we currently understand that is federally unlawful. And also to bring it across the international boundary, that's also considered unlawful unless one has registry. So because I have registry with the DEA, I'm able to import seed. However, I've not been able to import seed from Canada, Finland, and other nations that have very good varieties of industrial hemp, because of the Section 7 of 4060, that is existing statute, which allows for farmers to save seed. And the companies I've been working with will not ship seed to us because they will lose their protection, that is their intellectual property rights to those varieties. We in the current dash 2, the striking of that section will allow for direct importation of, say, seed from Finola, from Finland, and other varieties in Australia and Canada. And so I know that the exporters there have said if that's not there, Oregon State University will be able to bring more varieties in to try and see how well industrial hemp grows in Oregon. Thank you. And do you have any questions?
So that's 2371 you're really referring to, if I'm right, or is it the other way around?
Chair Clem, yes, it'd be 2371 I'm referring to.
Okay. And then did you also want to cover 2372, or do you want to go through all three of you and then revisit the other bill? It's pretty straightforward, so it won't take long.
If I may, Chair Clem, the 2372 establishes an industrial hemp commission, and with regard to that, for our own practices within the College of Agricultural Sciences, we enjoy our relationships with agricultural commissions, well over a dozen of them, and this would provide for the same business model, if you will, and workflow and relationship that we enjoy with our stakeholders and other commissions, be they Tall Fescue, Wheat Commission, et cetera. So we would see it would work very well for us. So thank you.
Okay. Let's, Matt, do you want to tell us what you think of these two bills?
Sure. Chair, representatives, thank you for having us here. Start out with our family this
first
last year.
Your name, please.
Oh, sorry. Matt Cyrus, Deschutes County. I'm here on behalf of myself as well as Deschutes County Farm Bureau and the Oregon Family Farm Association. This industry is pretty new to Oregon. The 2014 Farm Bill allowed for individual states to legalize and put together pilot programs for industrial hemp. Since then, Colorado, and Kentucky jumped on very quickly, and Oregon followed suit. This last year, for example, Colorado had over 10,000 acres of industrial hemp. Oregon had roughly 1,000. So Oregon is still behind in the rush for the nation in trying to reestablish an industry that has a huge amount of potential. Our family this year, this past year in 2016, raised 30 acres of industrial hemp. And from experience, we found that it's a very versatile crop. It uses far less water than any other crop that we raise, less fertilizer. The value per acre is much higher. It has a significant potential to revitalize agriculture, at least in Central Oregon as we know it. At this point, it's the only cash crop in Central Oregon that is generating a profit. All of the other commodity prices are down, so it has potential. I mean, we were one of two or three in Central Oregon this year. We've been contacted by a number of other farmers interested in raising it for 2017. It has a significant amount of potential. What we also found is that there were some problems with the statute, for example, with restrictions for OSU to be able to do research. There wasn't complete compliance with the 2014 Farm Bill, as was pointed out by the DOJ. And so we actually, there was a work group with a number of agencies, and I think we've addressed a lot of the issues that we identified as problems in moving forward, and we'd certainly appreciate your support of the Dash 2 amendments and moving forward with this bill. You know, like you say, I think the industrial hemp has huge potential in Oregon. We just need a few tweaks to help move it forward.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. We are the state's largest general ag association, representing about 7,000 farming and ranching families and over 220 different commodities. Industrial hemp is one of our newer commodities, and we've been pretty excited to get involved in that. Farm Bureau, just kind of as background, got involved in this issue in 2015 when there were some coexistence conflicts between the marijuana growers and the hemp growers, and both were kind of new to the scene and trying to figure out how they were going to coexist. And that's where Farm Bureau had stepped in and said, you know, we generally don't pick winners and losers. Let's see how we can work this out. And today, if you went out to some of the farms, you would see a medical grow maybe 200 feet from a industrial hemp grow. So pretty cool that people have been able to even work that out on their own farms. I think it's a really good story there. Coming out of that, in 2015, we worked with Representative Wilson and others. There were some issues in implementing the hemp program in the state. Worked through 2015 with Matt and several of the other growers, found that sweet spot where we could coexist. And then in 2016, passed House Bill 4060, which many of you are very closely aware of. And then that next year, in 2016, we saw quite a few folks, as you heard from Courtney, Moran, sign up to that hemp program, and we heard from our growers, you know, that they were struggling with some market access and competitiveness issues, and that's where we are today, coming here and trying to sort through some of those kinks in the program. And I think I'm pretty proud of the work product. It's like Courtney said, it's been several work group meetings, and folks have invested a lot of time into making this a workable product, and whether it's the Dash 2s or we're further refining, I think we're getting to that spot where we can put forward a program that actually works for Oregon growers and helps support the industry and gives them that foothold that they need to be successful. So we're here today to support the Dash 2s to House Bill 2731. Did I get my number right? I'm available for any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Vice Chair Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Matt, what would you say your number one challenge is right now regarding hemp?
Well, the most challenging part right now is finding extraction. But with regard to this bill and the address, one of the concerns is the fact that it doesn't completely comply 100% with the 2014 Farm Bill, because the language isn't there that specifies that it is the Industrial Hemp Agricultural Pilot Research Program. We found this past year that created a problem with banking. Whereas marijuana is clearly still a problem on the federal side, they did a carve-out for industrial hemp with the 2014 Federal Farm Bill. But the problem is that the banks were looking for the specific language in statute in order to think that they're okay with regard to banking regulations. I mean, we've come across some banks that are okay with it. We've had others that, without this specific language, won't work with us. And so we actually had to, for our farm accounts, had to change banks to find one that would work with us, the fact that we had a plot of industrial hemp. There's some other minor technical issues with regard to marketing CBD, the cannabidiol, into, for example, the OLCC side. It's kind of like selling the restriction against OLC is allowing near beer in a bar. You've got the non-THC stuff but because of their metric system, is difficult. They're having some problems which I don't understand, in tracking the non-THC stuff in the same facility as the THC products. Similar with extraction facilities. There's a lot of extraction capability right now for THC, but the OLCC will pull the license of any THC operator that actually processes industrial hemp, which makes absolutely no sense to me, because it should be easy to track it. I mean, as you're tracking anything else in and out. So, I mean, those are, like I say, not related to this particular bill, but with regard to the industry, those are a few things we're working on.
That's what I was asking. Thank you.
Okay. Vice Chair McClain.
Well, you just brought up something, and I recognize that it's not dealing with these two bills right in front of us, but I do think that it intercepts, and that is labs, you know, and how the tracking's happening and, you know, what are some of the differences, you know, with what you're going to need from a lab and what other products need from a lab. And so, and there's not enough labs. And so you called out in the dash two that one of the testing that would be dropped would be potency. Is that right?
I'm not familiar with the details of the dash two for sure. From a lab standpoint, one of the problems...
Maybe it was Courtney. I apologize.
One of the problems that we've run into is the... And one of the clarifications in here is we're looking for a certified lab as opposed to a very specific type of certification. For example, the Oregon Department of Agriculture's lab does not meet the specific... is not an ORLAB certified lab, even though it may exceed the capabilities. And so we tried to broaden the number of labs that can do the testing. You know, as far as it's as long as it's a legitimate test, it should count. The potency testing, I mean, I can't address that particular criteria, but in order to be hemp, before we can harvest, we have to pass the THC levels. And our limits are a 0.3% THC, which I've been told that it takes about 5% THC before a person can feel a high. And so this is significantly below. I mean, if it was being sold on the marijuana side, nobody'd buy it because it'd be completely worthless.
And to be honest, my question is just, you know, you were having trouble with banking and you were having trouble with other things, so I wanted to know if labs were on the list, because this gives me just a platform to say I think we've got problems with labs on all sides and not enough of them, and there's some issues and there's some safety issues on the other part of the other crops. And so I think it's something that it's we should recognize.
The delays that they're causing are certainly creating a problem. Currently it requires batch testing. And so we'll run a batch, and then we'll send it to a lab, and it generally takes about 2 weeks to get a result back. In the meantime, you don't know, for example, if your product, you know, meets all of the pesticides are, I mean, relatively easy, because once you've passed a pesticide, you know you're going to continue to, because you didn't change your field practices. But with regard to, you know, potencies, you know, whether there's any residual solvents and some of those things. I mean, we raise for CBD, and so we sell based on the percent of the actual CBD content in the oil. So until we get the lab back, we don't know how much we can charge for the material, if it's, you know, a 40% or a 60% potency.
Okay.
So, yeah, that is creating a problem, the delays. You know, it should be a three-day turnaround.
Okay.
Although you can get that if you pay twice as much.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And then let me call Jerry Norton up on 2372. Okay, welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Jerry Norton. Thank you for having us here today, representatives and Chairman Clem. I come from a long line of family farmers here in Oregon, grass seed growers by trade. Yeah. We're really excited about what's happening and the traction that we've made with this bill to this point. Courtney Moran and Representative Wilson have went way beyond the call of duty to make this happen for us, along with Jenny Dressler. And the Oregon Department of Agriculture has been very, very outgoing to us, and we're actually on a first-name basis with them now, so we really feel that we're making a lot of traction. We feel that hemp in Oregon, as farmers, is going to be the new crop of the decade, if not the century. We really believe that history is going to repeat itself. There's literally hundreds of articles throughout Oregon Archives newspapers, over the last 200 years, we used to take tugboats of seed out of the Portland port, ship them all across the United States. There is no reason why Oregon cannot lead the charge along with Kentucky and Colorado to make this a viable crop. We have a jump start on making rules in Oregon with our associates that have taken us to a level to where other states are actually reaching out to us on a daily basis and asking us what we're doing. I had a call yesterday from Vermont. People, all eyes are on Oregon with this, and they really feel we're doing everything in a really prudent way. So the bill that has been produced today, I truly believe, will take us, like Representative Wilson said, off the airstrip into the air, and we'll be able to get some flight and some a little bit of more traction, and we'll be able to actually make this bill happen. I'm here to answer any questions that you might have this afternoon. We worked really diligently hard last year. I had six locations last year. Some of them were smaller for seed crop. Some of them were for the flower crop. We did broadcast grow. We did overhead grow. We did a lot of different R&D. And so we're proud to be working with Oregon State and Jay Noller, and we're really excited about his chart flow process for his for the seed certification. It's truly about a certified seed, one that Oregon can count on, that we know that will not cross-pollinate, and that we'll be able to create a substantially viable crop that will help us economically as well as environmentally. So it's a big issue for us as an environmental issue. As this is a perfect crop, as what we call in farming cover crops. So this would be considered a rotation crop for us. And it's just smarter.
All right. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
That's it.
I think that's it. I will just take a second to acknowledge back in, I think it was 09, Senator, maybe it was 07, but anyway, Senator David Nelson, and I think he was a senator already, Przanski, both talked the legislature long before the Farm Bill changed into making available hemp as a legal farm product. I was sitting on the committee thinking, wow, this is a little different, but they had a lot of vision. It just took many years before the federal government made it possible to really do something, but Senator Przanski is still here, but Senator Nelson retired from Representative Barreto's part of the world not too long after that. But he was quite sold on this, and it kind of took this Eastern Oregon Republican saying, look, this is not pot. This is different. You, trust me, I would tell you if it was different. And it kind of got everybody more comfortable with the idea that this was, as Matt put it, not particularly useful for smoking, if that's what you're thinking. It's not going to work out so well for you. You just get a headache. So, with that, I'm going to close the public hearings on House Bill 2371, 2372.
Do this one.
What's that?
Can you do this one?
Well, I think Reverendo needs to do the work sessions.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And we're going to do our work sessions real quick because we may lose a member or two. We've got our biosolids bill. You have to reach back in memory. And this was the gentleman who, after getting his all the DEQ permissions, was running into some difficulties processing the biosolids in these portable tanks on farmland. We've got a dash one amendment, which makes it clear that these facilities need to be portable and temporary and not permanent facilities on EFU land, but they would just come in, do their lime mixing business and spread and leave. I think, does that basically explain it, Ms. Hanukkah? Yeah, okay. So, this is the 20, these are the dash ones that limit to the portability type treatment.
And we didn't have anybody, Mr. Chair, we didn't have anybody testify in opposition of this, did we?
No.
Chair Klem, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 3-2-17.
Vice Chair Springer moves the Dash 1 amendments dated 3-2-17. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so adopted.
Chair Klem, I move House Bill 2179 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Springer moves House Bill 2179 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Okay, and I believe this was Representative Stark's bill. So we'll, oh, there he is. He's here to shepherd over this baby. So we'll ask him to carry it on the floor. And then this next one is going to open a work session on House Bill, where is it? 3051. And I have totally forgotten what this bill does since we last heard it many weeks ago. Can you remind us?
Sure. Chair Klem, members of the committee, House Bill 3051 would address recommendations by the Task Force on Drought Emergency Response by allowing the use of monies from the Water Measurement Cost Share Program Revolving Fund to help pay for installation, repair, or replacement of a measuring device on an authorized diversion or point of appropriation in an effort to protect existing water rights or measure ground use, groundwater use.
That's right. Thank you. Okay.
Did we have opposition?
No, I don't think we had anybody concerned about this one either. This was one of the drought task force recommendations. But for some reason, we couldn't put them all in one bill relating to relating clauses, so I think this was a little standalone.
Chair Klem, I move House Bill 3051 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Springer moves House Bill 3051 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Okay, seeing none, so passed. Is this one that maybe could go on the consent calendar?
My only concern would be it talks about water.
Yeah, all right, just in case.
Talks about water.
And with that, Vice Chair Springer can carry the bill.
Woo!
Nope. Or we could give it to Benz. He's sort of the resident water person.
Oh, I think he would be. Okay, no, well, this isn't his bill. I'll do it.
All right. The danger of speaking up.
Thank you.
Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3053. There we go. Could you join us, April?
That guy have to go for a Bird's office.
Yeah, he texted me. He's like more like 9:25, so we may not make it today.
Chair Klem, Vice Chair Springer, members of the committee, for the record, April Snell, Executive Director with the Oregon Water Resources Congress. We represent irrigation districts and other agricultural water suppliers around the state. Here in support of HB 3053, which as drafted would set up a task force, which for me, I think of it as more of a discussion that would have a lot of merit to be continued, and perhaps the exact makeup of the task force as drafted might not be the best structure, but I really like the idea of carrying forward a lot of discussions that have been had in this body as well as in different task force over the last several years. There's been a lot of efforts in Oregon to invest in our water infrastructure, and yet we have a lot of needs still out there and a lot of good projects that have got funding over the years but for a variety of reasons just haven't moved forward. And Oregon, like many other states around the nation, has a lot of infrastructure that is failing, and the federal investment that made a lot of that happen, from our canals and pipelines and also our bridge and roads, that investment has largely dried up. And so as we look as a country about how we improve that, there are a lot of areas of opportunity where private and public investment in this infrastructure with appropriate safeguards is one of the ways that I think fundamentally we need to be addressing these issues. There's not enough money in all of the state budgets in Oregon to address the problems that we have with our water infrastructure. And I think that there are some discussions that need to be continued that have been started in some of the programs through the Water Resources Department, but I think there's other programs through IFA and OWEB that get at some of these issues. But if there is to be any federal investment package, it's a little too early to see what's going to come out of the Trump administration, but I think if there is an opportunity for some stimulus package at the federal level, it's going to be important for Oregon to have its act together and ensure we come to the table not only with money but solutions. And one of those solutions, I think, is looking at how we encourage greater public-private partnerships and how we help leverage the finite resources we have to improve water infrastructure, whether it's for communities that need safe drinking water, for farmers that need access to adequate water to grow the food we all consume, or whether it's adequate water for the fish and wildlife that depend on a lot of the return flows from this infrastructure. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have and appreciate your time today.
Any questions for April at this point? Go play basketball.
Yeah, maybe you can answer the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doesn't the Water Resource Department have someone that does this, that would be looking into these issues?
Chair Killam, Representative Esquivel, to my knowledge, while the department has some fantastic staff that are working on some water issues, there, to my knowledge, is no one who is charged with looking at the opportunities for, in particular, public-private investment. That's not necessarily the Water Resources Department's role, and I think that they don't necessarily have the staff capacity to start what, in essence, be sort of a new project if they had to do this on their own, as opposed to having some sort of group of smart people who would sit at a table and bring all this information together.
April, I don't see Water Watch signed up to testify, but we've got a letter. Have you had a chance to see that at all?
Chair Clem, members of the committee, I did, and in part that just encouraged me to come up here and support this fine idea.
I haven't read it all the way. I just wondered if there's anything you want to respond to, but if you haven't read it either, then
I think, you know, I very briefly read it, and I think it may be that they didn't read the bill. I'm not entirely sure. I think that there's an opportunity to, depending on how you look at the bill as drafted, I don't think it precludes there being a balance of interests. And, you know, and as I preface my comments, I think it's more of a concept and a discussion starter. And I'm open to thoughts, and I'm sure there's some smart people out there that could come up with some better language that would clarify the smart people that might be involved in such a discussion. I do find it interesting that the opponents think that it is a bill designed to support my interests, because I don't see anything in there that would say that. But as I said, I think it's a good idea to get smart people from diverse interests to talk about this.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And John Audley, please.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is John Audley. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Business Council. I'm a consultant for OBC, and my job for them is to strengthen its ties to rural economic priorities. As evidence of our efforts last year, the Leadership Summit hosted 7 sessions, more than half of the afternoon sessions dedicated entirely to issues defined and represented by rural business leaders. Among our longstanding priorities, OBC has recognized the constraints associated with non-municipal water-related infrastructure investments. From working with our business leaders, we see the direct connection between profitability and water and development infrastructure. For example, in Morrow, Umatilla counties, available water has been a key factor in the region's ability to serve as a key economic hub in eastern Oregon. Therefore, we continue to support completion of the projects envisioned during the Columbia River Umatilla Solutions Task Force and partially funded in 2015. While OBC recognizes that HB 3053 is a work in progress, I think your discussion with April kind of underscores that, a properly structured task force can better clarify an equitable share of the public and private commitments necessary to meaningful, ecologically sound, and economically viable infrastructure projects. And we think that's a worthy activity, and we would pledge to devote our resources to providing good analytical information to inform this discussion. Thank you.
Any questions for John?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Nobody else here on this one? So let me close the public hearing on House Bill 3053. And our challenge on this next one is our good friend Representative Hurd is still en route up from Southern Oregon. So we do have somebody from DOJ and I think maybe even ODA here to answer questions.
Tax information.
But I'm unable to get a sense from Representative Hurd if he'd like to explain it before we just... Oh, he just wrote me back. Let me just take a look. It's a while.
Yeah.
Cheryl, do you feel okay to comment on? Would you rather wait till Thursday after Representative Hurd's explained it? It's so short of a bill. I feel like somebody could probably tell us what's going on because it's hardly anything at all on paper, but there must be some backstory we don't know. But okay. Well, why don't we just carry it over then? We'll start us off and get this done quickly on Thursday. So I'm going to carry over House Bill 3338. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
And colleagues, we had a bunch of people, I think, pull their bills at the last second after it was too late to change anything. So you get a free hour before
wow.
the floor session.
Whoa.
Yeah. Please don't encourage them to do that every time. Otherwise, we're going to kill a whole bunch of bills at the end for lack of using the committee time wisely. But with that, I'll join the committee. Thanks.
Enjoy your cookies. You know there's milk in the hall.
I'm going to
get
some milk.
You want a
cookie? You want a gluten-free chocolate
cookie? They're and dairy gluten-free.
Free chocolate cookie.
They're and dairy gluten-free.